James, Reel 5. Right, so if you're on the parade ground with Cottle Sears.
Well, I've got a fag every 45 minutes, but if you didn't smoke, well, bad luck for you. But you soon decided that you wanted a fag.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd start to be non smokers became smokers.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody smoked.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed a fag.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to get off the back square and into the side when you're off. Smoke, and suddenly, I fag out! Get in! Yeah, put the fag out straight away. Much more want to get back into threes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you carry on to the next. Well, you'll have weeks and weeks and weeks of this solid square bashing until eventually you were doing it, you were automaton, you were doing it in your sleep, and then suddenly you have a soldierly burning.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you have a measurable step. You know, and you're a good marcher. And without knowing what you're doing, you know, you're so good at marching, and you're sitting down normally, and all the same thing. And then, of course, as well, on top of that, you had your inoculations, and the tetanus, the TABs.
What was TAB? What did that stand for?
It was anti-typhoid, TB, things like that. You had jabs for every known disease, and you were suddenly told, right, tomorrow morning, operate 9:30, and the medical office and the surgeon, the doctor's place was outside of the barracks. You marched out of the portals, turn left up the Kempston. Turned left again down Springfield Road, and there was a big house where the doctor was. They all were assembled there, the Dr. Chalmers, and had a medical FFI and a medical examination. And
what's FFI?
Free from infection. You know, they could catch anybody who got BD, and all that sort of thing. And that's it, you know, and all sorts of things, you can advise. It was
were there any problems like that in the early days with the early recruits, you know, from people from very poor backgrounds with any of that kind of health problems of anybody being rejected for service? But
they probably were rejected, but before we ever saw them, you know, everybody was on that balance square was fit. So fit that you had to be regular in your motions as well. You had to be up with an arm. Get your breakfast, come back, you've got to have done your crap and you've got to be ready. If you were caught short in the middle of the morning, and I've known chaps, you know, to say to Corporal Sears, Corporal, I've got to go to the loo. You bloody well won't! Suddenly, out through like this, he's got the shits. I think he doubled that man around the barrack square. I've seen that, terrible.
So,
The man couldn't help it because he probably had a good cancer night before or he had something that didn't agree with him. But I've seen Corporal Sears ruthless. He wouldn't let the man fall out, even when he had diarrhea.
So, you reveille on a morning, your kid is all packed up and so on. And then, so in the early phase of your training, take us through a typical day. Would you start with square bashing or?
Yes, we'd have square bashing, marching. You will then have arms drill, handing your rifle.
And how long was it before you actually got to?
Immediately. Immediately, your marching drill, with your pack on your back to give you bearing, soldierly bearing. But the beauty of it was, you were in a barracks with a metal surface. In the barrel, I mean a rather vast concrete pave ground, even there for the purpose. You know, instead of being in a feet or something, we couldn't hear it, you could hear your feet. And not only you of this vast ITC infantry training center parade ground, Corporal Sears Squad was only one of 20 going in all directions, all over the place, as far as I could see. Under different NCOs. And of course, the divorces, you had no idea how they were going on, and all that sort of thing. But it was a big sausage machine in the early 40s, getting the army trained quickly. And we needed them.
Yeah. So, square bashing.
Square bashing, and then arms drill. Your rifle's your best friend, 8 pounds, 10.5 ounces. Keep it clean. If you don't, it'll let you down. You'll be dead. You know. 8 pounds, 10.5 ounces. You will learn to handle that. It'll be as light as a feather. You'll be throwing it about. It'll be your best friend. That's your best friend about that. It's got to be clean. And if it wasn't clean as well, you would have to suspect it every morning as well. You know, you pulled through, and the white thing was bright, gleaming. And you know, if anybody was found with a dirty rifle, oh, you saw it.
Did that happen?
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
yes.
What would couples...
40 days, CD, peace spans 40 days, or calico, or something, or you went through, let out of barracks, you were punished by losing your free time.
Did you get into trouble at all at this stage?
I didn't, because I was a good soldier. I said myself, I was careful. Not to do anything wrong.
And with the, so you'd have square bashing, arms drill, and what are the...
Then after that, there'd be a few craft. They would take you, you'd march you over the barracks, you'd view the place, bring you the meadows, farmlands and whatnot, and they would teach you a few craft. Well, I didn't need to be taught any few craft. I mean, I was brought up in America, and the most of the southwest borders in the days of my boyhood, doing their few craft up the mountains. And I had inborn in me field craft. I could hide myself, I could track, I could never be found out. I could take advantage of holes in the ground and hollows, you know, and camouflage. I was a born field craft trained chap.
But in terms of their training, how would that...
That's right, but anyway, we were taught field craft.
And how would that
and that was very interesting because, you know, you'd be on your guts crawling forward as an infantryman, using your elbows and your legs, going like a frog, you know. And but we've seen to have foliage in your netting and your steel helmet to take advantage of dead ground. And you learn to give instructions for shooting by looking at objects like trees. You know, you say, 12 o'clock, lone tree, 200 yards right, you know, so that you're told where to aim for, and all that sort of thing. And it became second nature eventually to understand what 12 o'clock meant. And 11 o'clock and 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock, and that's for the clock system for your field of view in front. And if you wanted to sort of bring your attention or draw your attention to anything here, right, 12 o'clock lone tree, right, to the left of that, or midday, 6 p.m., you know, 6 o'clock. But you could find anything by the clock system. And that was one of the things that... that was very useful. It was used by the infantrymen in all the regiments.
So there's field craft. What about the whole the business of cleaning your kit and polishing your boots and so on?
Oh, that was a big part of your life. You were given 2 pairs of boots that had been greased. It was your job to get the grease off them. They'd be in store. And it was and it's your job to get those shining bright. Took you weeks, spit and polish. And you'd have your finger in the cherry blossom of your duster, and you'd be spitting on your toe cap, and you'd be rubbing this polish in, spitting again until the polish disappeared. Weeks and weeks of spit and polish on the boots until they were shining, you could see your face in them. And even the bottoms underneath it as well.
Did you have anybody in the squad that was like awkward, that couldn't really get the grips with marching or with cleaning their rifle?
There were some who suffered. The ones who were unclean, the ones who didn't bother, they were scrubbed with a scrubbing brush.
Who by?
By the large corporals. Mm-hmm. Would take him down to the cold ablutions and they'd have the hose on him and they'd scrub him. But it was something like that. He would just mm-hmm. had no segue, but mind you, he wouldn't be scrubbing for long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In addition to being hose and scrubbed, mm-hmm. viciously with a scrubbing brush, mm-hmm. he'd have CB as well. Combined mm-hmm. to balance, you know.
So yeah. During your basic training period, after like a day of square bashing and a day of, you know, field craft and arms drill and so on, about what time, I mean, meal breaks and...
Yes, and then, of course, this way.
You'd have reveille...
You would have, as far as I can remember, in the training as well, we had a tripod and a rifle on, mm-hmm. and you'd have a target right at the other end of the playground, and... Mm-hmm. And you've got to set your rifle up to get your sights, your bead, and right on the target, and the corporal coming on and you level up. And he'd know whether you could sort of use your rifle sights.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, right? Knocking my side. Next line. You bloody blind, or what? What the bloody have you got your sights on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there was Baker Drill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You had these sacks of straw, and you had to charge and scream like hell with your bayonets and stick it through.
Did they encourage you to scream?
You had the second lieutenants on the side of the left, they're watching your enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And after you've done it, come here, lad, what's your name? James, sir. Go to the company office. You're going to be a lance corporal.
that early in you?
Yeah.
During basic training?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
When you saw me going, screaming and digging my rifle in.
Did people enjoy the bayonet practice?
Well, it was all part of it. You had to throw in tears, yes, and you knew that you were watched, and you knew that they were looking for talent as well. Mm-hmm. You knew I could see it, I could sense it.
Did you also, could that also for some soldiers be an outlet for all the pent up anger at the sergeant major?
That's right. You say, oh, you know, you scream your bloody eyes, you know, so get rid of your anger, get rid of it. Mm. But the beggar is frequent in Bedford.
Yeah.
And I remember particularly the young officer, his name was Sladen. And he was a very smart man, second lieutenant, Sladen. He was taken prisoner at Singapore and murdered by the Japs later.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember him, and he was my officer.
Yeah. Did you have much? Obviously, Corporal Sears was the man that you'd be seeing every day, and he'd be like omnipresent. What about other NCOs? Not the lance corporals, but let's say sergeant majors, sergeants, officers.
Right.
Anyway, how much?
I soon found out that Corporal Sears. I've been delegated to train us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to be with us until we had finished our square bashing,
mm-hmm.
basic training, field craft, arms drill, and we were saddled with him for about 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
him alone. Then one day, things were going to move on. They wanted to find signalers, drivers, and everything else. And you had the opportunity then, you were all afraid, I could drive a car. And I said, well, I'll try to get to the MT first of all.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sergeant Major now on parade, Sharp his name was, he was a very smart chap, with two sergeants, RSM Sharp, RSM Ginger Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp was a smart man. I admired him. Ginger Beasley was an old ginger dawdling pig, and I didn't admire him at all for that. I was Sharp. I modelled myself on him.
Mm-hmm.
He was very smart,
mm-hmm.
and he was a real RSM. And he said, we're looking today for drivers. All those who can drive one pace forward, march! I stepped forward. He said, right, but I don't want you lot. because I want those who can't drive. You, Lord, will have bad habits. He said, right, you step back. You're going in the motor transport. Mm. You can't really drive? No, sir. No. Right, you're going to learn the army way from the first lesson. Mm. That was the very first thing that taught me, watch out in the future when you volunteer. You should not. I missed going into the MT because I was keen and I stepped forward.
Mm.
And I wanted to drive a van or a truck.
Mm.
Not you, no. Then he was looking for grammar school boys, and I was then a bit apprehensive there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I became a signalman.
And did you volunteer for that, or did you have to do it by?
No. He said, "I want grammar school boys. You have to learn a lot. You'll be leaving the barracks today and doing it in 30 minutes on the Ant Hill Road, and you'll be doing your training in a big disused chalk factory now owned by Granada."
Mm-hmm.
In Hunter,
mm-hmm.
in spacious grounds and lawns, and that was the signal school. And I was master out there, and I was a signaler.
Mm-hmm. So this was after your 6 weeks basic training.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of, at the end of the 6 weeks, was there any kind of what's the word? There was were you officially like a semi-trained soldier? You were a trained soldier at the end of 6 weeks. You wouldn't be,
no,
would you?
No, that's basic training.
That was your basic.
If you were going to be, yes, but your basic training. Now they were looking for, they wanted to form other parts of the infantry battalion,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
by having Air Corps Company.
Yeah, but out of the men in your hut, out
they
of
the... Not the infantrymen, they carried on, and they mm. carried on grenades, mm. right, you mm. know, priming grenades. Mm.
Did you do work with grenades?
Oh,
and
yes,
mortars
everybody
and so on.
Thought about
did
grenades.
You go through the... So even in the first 6 weeks, you would do the Bren and the...
The Bren gun, you had your full training before you went to the signals.
Mm-hmm.
You had your instruction with the Bren gun. You had to take the bits very, very quickly and assemble it in the time allowed.
Mm-hmm.
You had to change barrels. You had to change magazines. You had to be absolutely quick and instant without thinking
mm-hmm.
in your action. You weren't dropped from the Bren gun training mm-hmm. until you...
Did you see any other automatic weapons at this time?
The Bren gun.
What about the Lewis,
no,
the old First World War?
We had the anti-tank, the boys' anti-tank rifle. That was a class, that was a toy, that was funny, that was.
Mm.
You had this long sort of boy, because it's called boys' anti-tank.
Mm.
You fired an anti-tank projectile,
mm.
and then there was a peanut. Projectile infantry anti-tank. That was another thing. That was very effective, actually. But you had to have the guts to wait until the tank ever closed quarters.
Mm-hmm.
But you had all this training with Bren, but of course, in those days, we had no other automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
We later had Tommy guns.
Mm-hmm. But at this stage, you wouldn't have anything like that. But this is what we're anticipating, Mr. James.
Yes, I had a Tommy gun.
Yeah. So at this stage of the 6 weeks training, obviously this is pre-Dunkirk, so there wouldn't be any shortage of
equipment. It's pre-Dunkirk, and not only that, but we had First World War arms.
Mm-hmm.
We had the SMLE rifle,
mm-hmm.
the First World War rifle, unchanged, single shot. I often think to myself, you know. And we went into battle with the SMLEs as well.
Mm.
As compared with the American Army with their automatic rifles and the German Army with their Schmeissers and Michigan, we had single-shot rifles. And we were told that the battalion, you know, when we get rapid fire, can bring about a lot of telling, sort of destructive fire on the enemy. With a single shot gun or a single shot rifle, we were really not with it.
Mm.
They soon found out.
Mm.
But,
yeah. But at the time, Mr. James, when you first picked up the Lee Enfield and you first fired it, had you had any firearms experience at all in Wales? So that would be literally the first time you fired a rifle.
None whatsoever.
And what did you feel at the time about the weapon? Did you feel confident with it?
We were told. In the last words, it was a wonderful thing, you know. We were the best equipped in the world, I thought, you know what I mean, intelligent-wise. When we realized that the Yanks had automatic rifles, the Germans had these very, like, triple-based Smithers. I often think about it.
But going back to, you did your 6 weeks training, so the rest of the recruits with you, most of those would have stayed on and trained as infantry.
That's right. But then we had guard duties as well, incidentally, before we were allowed in the war or anything else. We had to do our sentry training. And the Bezenhards and little outlying stations, ammunition depots and things like that that had to be guarded. So you were detailed for sentry duty. 2 hours on, 4 hours off for 48 hours. You'd be in the guard group as part of the guard. You had to learn for a sentry drill, guard mounting drill. You had to be part of the guard. You weren't allowed at all to leave the guard room.
What about quality of turnout at this time? Did you have the stick, man?
Absolutely. You get the stick if you were the best turned out, and everybody aimed for that. Some people knew that they could never win the stick, but I got the stick a few times. This is why, you know, I was sort of singled out as well. I was absolutely.
Did that demand a lot of work?
I used to sleep on my trousers. I used to turn my trousers inside out, but soap down, and then have them a little bit wet and put them under a mattress and lie on them. And when I got up, they were as if it ironed them, and the soap crease would stay there for ages, you know. It was all part of the ball.
Would there be a contrast, say, between you, you know, you took it all very seriously and went for the smart turnout. Would there be a contrast between you and, let's say, the least?
Or there'd be competition. There'd be competition. Everybody with a demo. You got some who wouldn't make a demo. But everybody with a demo to get the stick. If you maybe got the stick, you were...
No, what did that mean, getting the stick?
Well, it means you were the best turned out in the guard inspection. And you didn't do your stint. You probably instead made the cocoa. You know, you were there on guard, but you didn't do the two on, four off. You know, you were treated as well. You got the guard commander was a sergeant, and he'd have his NCOs, but you were favoured. You got the stick. You'd be... excuse the stint on the guard duty. So I was on guard duty with Peter Kelly, this chap, at this place in Elstow, which is an ammunition dump. 2 hours on, 4 hours off. And we're both on the gate. And up came Peter Kelly's mama in his big car. And I knew he was in trouble. She's going to stop this woman. I said, go into the car to talk to the guard commander, came out. I told her to back it off. She mustn't come, I mustn't visit this place. Of course, her little boy, you know, gone. But anyway, when we were off duty, and we were on duty all over the weekend, incidentally, it was a weekend guard from midday Saturday until Monday morning. And she called me and asked me, would I help her son? And would I be his friend? Would I encourage him to do this and the other and be sympathetic towards him when he was down, you know, all the way? I said, oh, you'd be all right. I said, you know, it's new with the army. It's really rugged. Tough at the moment, especially when this severe cold weather. And severe cold, was so cold in this hut that we used to fold our towels at night on our bedhead. And there was a great big red hot stove there. And despite that, the stove would go at 2 a.m. and you wake up in the morning and your towels like a board. The frost was in the room and we were all frozen. I just eat the cap later on, vest on, pullover on.
Did you have anybody who just couldn't take it and, you know, ran off or any problems of that kind?
In this spring or the winter of 1940, very bad weather, everybody remembers it. Very bad January and February. There were quite a lot who had pneumonia and were sent to hospital and were in a sick bay with one thing after the other. But thank God, I was all right.
Are there any other incidents that spring to mind from your first 6 weeks of training? Any amusing
things?
Any other incidents that spring to mind from your early days? Your first 6 weeks, any kind of incidents?
There were on route marches, of course. That was the bane of our lives, really, because sometimes we used to march 25. We start off at 15 miles, then 20, then 25. And everybody had listeners, because these boots had to be polished. And if you polished them, they became hard. I think the ideal thing is to have supple footwear, with grease and stuff to keep them soft. But no, you've got to have it hard. People had blisters galore. On the big blisters, some people had very, very bad feet, but it was still not excused the following day. You still had to do your square bashing.
And what would a standard route march be at this time? Because obviously with the DLR you had much longer route marches. What would they be at this time?
Well, of course, by the time we'd done our basic down the best parts, and we'd marched all through the Bedfordshire countryside from Bedford down to Anthill, and all around, miles around, we could do about 50 to 20 miles and we worked up to 30. We had good legs. By the time we sort of transferred to the Downs, we were really, we had done it, you know what I mean?
We'll get to that in due course. So, at the end of 6 weeks, you've been selected as a signaller.
That's right.
And
then we had new NCOs.
So that was your last, you saw of Corporal Sayers?
Yes, I saw Corporal Sayers. I didn't see Corporal Sayers again for about 3 years when I met him in Norfolk. When I was a CQMS, and he was still at home.
And can you remember that incident? What happened?
Well, I knew, I met him quite accidentally, actually. But even then, he was still sort of, But by now, I was a senior rank. And I said, Corporal Sayers, you remember me? He said, well, your face is very familiar. So I thought, your face is very familiar. And he met me at St. John's Station in Bedford, North Bedford, the NCC. I said, you made my life unbearable. I said, I can't hold anything against you. I said, you may be a soldier. So he said, oh, that's nice to know. And he was still, He's like a bloody good man in the foreign nation, he was one of the old pre-war.
About how old was he?
Oh, he must have been about the middle 30s to the early 40s. He must have been about 30, 30 and 40. But he was a tough, he was a corporal, mere corporal. I rather think that he had been more than that, but he'd lost his position. He'd lost either his crown and laurels, or he'd lost his three stripes.
Yeah.
You know.